Don Fraser, thanks so much for taking a little bit of time by phone to talk with us today about this subject. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
So first, let me just ask, where did your interest in bees come from? Were you the type of kid that was always collecting insects?
No. Actually, I grew up on a farm, on a grain farm, and then went to pharmacy school, graduate school, and became a pharmacy professor. My interest in bees actually started when I started planting fruit trees about 20 years ago, just north of San Antonio. And then the bee population kept dwindling to the point where about 12 or 13 years ago, no bees, no fruit, and I needed to get involved in beekeeping. So I joined the Alma Area Beekeepers Association, and my interest in bees grew from there, and started teaching about bees, and I'm vice president of the Alma Area Beekeepers Association and do the programming for the group.
Good. Well, today in this conversation here, we're going to try and go through why bees are important, the trends and changing views in beekeeping, and what we as consumers can do to help our planet. And I think that most people know that bees pollinate flowers and other growing plants and fruits, but you've really laid out for us just how essential they are to our food supply. Can you expand on that?
Well, when you take a look at emphasizing a point, visual examples are extremely important. And in 2013, Whole Foods did a couple of visuals where they removed all fruits, vegetables dependent on pollinators from its produce section, and created a very visual example of what our supermarkets would look like without pollinators. And so take a look at those slides. You've got, this is what your grocery store looks like with bees, and then this is what your grocery store looks like without bees. And then we go to the produce section and look at with bees, without bees. So then what that does is it starts people thinking, because oftentimes when you ask people where they get their food, they'll say the grocery store. But you've got to think back further in terms of, you know, who is producing that those products, the farmers and so on, and actually how does that happen and what's involved. So, you know, we need to become a lot more educated about where our food comes from.
I say that's a really stark example, those visuals that you have up there on screen of just how much is how essential bees are to our food supply. And we're going to talk in just a moment about what we can do in order to help keep something like this from happening. There are lots of people that interact with bees. You have commercial beekeepers, consumers, hobbyist beekeepers. How do each of these groups address their concerns or about insect and pollinator health?
Well, from the commercial beekeeper standpoint, there's probably about 1.5 million hives in the United States. And there's probably more than that because of the hobbyist beekeepers, but that's the number that the USDA is putting out. So after in the past 30 plus years, we've had pests that have come into play in the United States, such as varroa mites, tracheal mites, hive beetles, and various viruses that were not there, at least in the United States, 30 years ago. We also have fire ants, wax moths, crazy ants, and so on, that have been around for eons that impact the ability of commercial beekeepers and hobbyist beekeepers to actually keep their bees alive. We also had the challenge in 1990 where the so-called Africanized bees came from South America into Central America and finally into the United States in 1990. And so those bees have actually populated most of the southern United States, and they're not hard for us to handle if we're out in a non-urban area, but urban beekeepers not like nice, friendly bees. Now, the economics of the commercial beekeepers, they end up doing, they sell honey products, but they also do a lot of pollination work. With vegetables, fruits, nuts, etc. And so when beekeepers are taking their hives into those orchards, fields, etc., they're often being exposed to insecticides and herbicides that are impacting the quality of life or health of the bees. We also have a situation where farms have gotten larger and there are monocrops. So we're talking thousands and thousands of acres with the same plant. And so that's a mono diet. If we just subsisted on a small portion of our food diet, it's the same thing from the humans. The bees require variation in their diet in order to have a healthy environment. And so another thing is the commercial foreign competition. We as consumers in the United States consume much more honey than we're able to produce. And so a lot of that is imported from other countries. What that does from the commercial beekeeper standpoint is it lowers the price of the local United States honey, and it impacts the margins of the beekeepers. We also have cost of production, such as food, medicines, equipment, transport, and even theft of bees, which impact the cost of production. Another issue is the quality of the queens, in other words, queen viability. It used to be that queens would last 2 to 3 years, and now it's a matter of them living months instead. And finally, incidental exposure to insecticides. That's the politics and so on. You have beekeepers who are using or not using, their bees are being exposed to insecticides during the pollination process. But we also have a government, you know, the EPA and various agencies and so on that promote the use of insecticides, herbicides, et cetera, that are actually harming the quality of life and the lifespan of the bees.
Yeah, well, the thing is that we as consumers, we want food, and you have this at the top part of your slide right here, year-round access. We want everything all the time.
Right. So from the consumer standpoint, we want food, as you pointed out, year-round, all types of food. So we've got food coming from North America, Central America, Southern America, Asia, et cetera. And so how does that impact things? Well, the standards that one has in one country may differ from another in terms of insecticide, herbicide use, use of antibiotics, et cetera, that are in our produce. We have an environment now where people want organic food for the most part. There's a lot of folks out there that don't have the resources, the financial resources to pay for it, okay? So you have a trade-off in terms of organic versus non-organic, but people do want, you know, pasture-raised, free-range, chemical-free, et cetera. And then you have the folks out there that will put, you know, marketers that will put gluten-free on almost anything. I'm still waiting for gluten-free broccoli. So then, you know, in terms of the cost, quality, and people wanting good food, there's the issue of genes and epigenetics, okay? We're born with a certain number of genes and so on, and type of genes. And it used to be that, hey, this is what I'm born with, this is what is going to kill me, et cetera. Yet epigenetics or gene expression tells us that the environment, chemicals, et cetera, have a significant effect in terms of gene expression. So what we eat now and in the future and what we are exposed to will have a tremendous effect in terms of our health and the health of the insect world as well. We also see life skills going back in time where people are learning gardening skills and other types of skills which, you know, if you want good food, then grow it, okay? And then we've got social media, and there's an advantage there in terms of access to information. But there's also a disadvantage there in that people can just read the headlines and get information that may be disinformation.
Right.
And that's something that we encourage folks to do your homework. Don't just read the headlines. And then you've got different changes as well. I on the slide there, I've got USDA proposes changes to the national list for organic producers, okay? For the folks that just read a label, organic, the rules are changing. And if you want true organic food, then you've got to speak up and make sure that the USDA follows through on having true organic food and not watering down the rules.
Well, how about for people who let me take that again. How about for the hobbyist beekeepers out there? Are they doing anything in order to help the population? How do they affect the actual supply and demand, so to speak, of insects and what they do for us?
Well, a variety of ways. Just by buying local, okay, and you know, going into the grocery store and actually reading the labels and saying, if they want honey, is this a local product? When they go to farmers markets and so on, actually asking the people there, you know, where do you have your bees, and tell me about your beekeeping, etc. And you'll find that there are some individuals that are bringing farm to market, where they're actually producing the product that they're selling, and others where they're just buying the product from any place and then selling it. And so it may or may not be local, even though it's advertised as such. So buy local. Then in 2012, the Texas legislature approved a special valuation for beekeeping, you know, think ag exempt. So folks that have acreage of 6 to 20 acres can actually substitute beekeeping for cattle, goats, sheep, etc. And there are rules that they can follow county by county, which will allow them a reduced taxation. And so that's becoming more popular as well. And then there's the honey exemption Texas Senate bill, which allows hobbyist beekeepers to actually sell their honey in local farmers markets, etc. And so the state of Texas is actually doing some positive things in terms of helping the beekeepers. There's back to nature, pollination of backyard fruit trees and gardens, you know, where people are understanding, hey, I've got a garden here, but people have told me that bees will actually help with pollination. And they find out that there's an explosion of fruits and vegetables as a direct result of that. Educational resources. There's more books and internet sources and local clubs available to help educate folks about beekeeping in general. And then the bee suppliers and vendors. Over the past 10 plus years, there's been a real increase in terms of the quality and competition amongst the bee suppliers and vendors. And then there's a culture change. Focus on protecting and preserving bees. It used to be probably about 10 years ago that the city of San Antonio, if someone phoned in and said, I've got a swarm of bees in my house, that the police and fire department would come out and exterminate the bees. Now, over the past 5 to 7 years, there's calls going out to beekeepers from the city and elsewhere saying, save the bees. We know they're in trouble. So that recognition has got through to the public, which is wonderful.
You know, you have referenced this a moment ago, and your background, with your medical background, you've studied gut health. Tell me about how, very briefly here, about how insects and influence our own health.
So my background is in the healthcare field, okay, where I was a pharmacy professor, and then I worked in the pharmaceutical industry for a number of years. So when you start taking a look at the impact that what products we eat, what products we consume, what products we use, and the negative impact that it has on the gut microbiome of the human, you can actually transfer a lot of that information to the insect world. And that's what I've done in terms of taking a look at what's going on in the honeybee gut. And, you know, you take a look at researchers like Dr. Morin at the University of Texas at Austin, and they're doing a lot of really good research on gut microbiome and how it's impacted by the environment and different types of products that are out there. That's not the only lab that's doing that, okay? But people have to become familiar with microbiome and start minimizing the use of products such as herbicides, insecticides, antibiotics, et cetera, because it is impacting both human health and the insect world as well.
Well, what are the things that folks listening and watching this in the room right here can do to help the population of pollinators in Texas and around the world?
Well, there's a lot of different things, okay? First of all, when you start taking a look at social media and competing commercial interests and so on, realize that you need to actually take the time to understand the issues, ask questions, find quality information, and look at a variety of sources and different points of view. It's going to require some time on your part in order to do that, but don't just read the headlines. And that's a lot of what we end up doing on our phones these days.
Yeah.
The second thing is support your local beekeepers, both economic and political. In other words, buy local honey, support beekeepers. I don't think San Antonio has any problems with having bees in an urban area, but be sensitive to what your neighbors want and make sure you've got nice tame bees. But anytime you see bees on the plants in your yard, that means that those bees are fairly close by. Then the thing that I would really like people to do is significantly reduce their use of insecticides and herbicides. People will go to big box stores like, you know, Home Depot, Lowe's, et cetera, and the insecticides and herbicides are right there. See a bug, kill a bug, okay? We need to get away from that attitude, okay? Because it's a real problem, and we need to address it. And the next thing is growing Texas natives. Join groups like the Native Plant Society of Texas. There's lots of local chapters. And then talk with local beekeepers about what type of plants would be appropriate for nectar and pollen sources. And then change our landscape a little bit from non-nectar and pollen sources to plants that are native to Texas that are going to grow well and provide the nectar and pollen sources that our insect world needs. The next thing is buy local honey. And if you can't find local honey, just go to a local beekeeping association and so on and find your own beekeeper or become a beekeeper. The next thing is support backyard gardens and community gardens. We're seeing, like using Detroit as an example, there's housing wasteland in certain parts of Detroit. And what they've done there is actually turn that into community gardens. And we need to see more of that, okay? Buy organic foods. If you can afford it, you know, try to do it or grow your own food. And then educate and spread the word. Educating yourself is one thing. Spreading the word and having good information and being able to support your thought process is important. The information's out there. You just have to go get it. Become an advocate and use your influence. You can have an influence with social media that is much greater these days than what it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And then finally, become a hobbyist beekeeper. If that's something you'd like to do, we will end up teaching you how to do it. And I would encourage folks to, there's good books available. Some, you know, the Beekeeper's Handbook for one. Beekeeping for Dummies is another one that's actually pretty good. Buy a current edition of it. Take beekeeping courses and not just one. That's what I did, okay? And then find mentor or mentors that can help educate you. And if you talk with 10 different beekeepers, you'll get 20 different opinions, okay? So, by reading and becoming knowledgeable up front, you're not simply going to say or accept do this, buy this, et cetera, when I teach a class, you know, it's an all-day class, and we go through all this stuff, the things that can happen in the first 2 or 3 years, and that's what you need to do. You know, you don't want to spend a lot of money on doing things that you find out later on that's not what you should be doing, okay?
Yeah.
But again, there's lots of different ways to get into beekeeping if that's what you want to do. It's a fun hobby, and you'll help the environment.
All right. Well, Don Frazier, VP of Alamo Area Beekeepers, thank you very much for taking your time and sharing this knowledge with us. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.